stirred up and channeled into the wrong way of thinking. You know, either it stirs you up sexually or angry, or, you know, this is not music is not meant to this, to bring them back to heaven again. That's what music is meant for. So, now where am I now? Yeah. And then besides, you know, when my second mother came into the house, you know, she thought we should all consecrate ourselves to the Sacred Heart. Now the Catholics will understand it, but it really means to consecrate yourself to the Lord. And we did that, you know, as a family. And I think really God took over, and he used his plan to send us around with songs of sadness and of mirth. And so he was with us. And we cannot move hearts of people. It's God who moves, you know. And so many of us thought that we always want to sing for God. And I think this was also the reason why we stayed together so long. We stayed together for 20 years. Can you believe that? The English singers they sang the longest at that time of any choir. They sang 10 years together. They were not a family, you know. But we were a family, and we stayed together 20 years. Now you can imagine. This is, in a way, unnatural. But because God was behind it, he helped us that we stayed together. And we enjoyed singing. We enjoyed traveling too. Well, he has to give some joy, otherwise it's a pain in the neck, you know? And you cannot sing as a pain in the neck, you know? And so then we traveled all for until 56. We traveled all over the States, you know, and one day we also traveled through Vermont.
So you were here from
1938. Yeah, then we went once back to 39, spring 39, we went back because we had contracts for Sweden, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. So we went back, and we still were Italians, so the Italians could go back to Salzburg, and then my brother could not go back, and Father Wasner, our conductor, could not go into Austria either. So they went to South Tyrol and waited for us there. And then we went to South Tyrol, and then we went up to Sweden to spend the summer there. Lake Mela, say, you know. And at that time, Hitler moved into Poland. And we thought we'll never get back. We'll end up in a concentration camp in Sweden. But our managers, they worked hard to get us a place on the Bergensfjord, a Norwegian line, to take back. At that time already lots of people wanted to go back to America, so they built in another floor on the boat, you know, where the water, you could hear the water slush back and forth at the bottom, you know, under the, it was smelling awful, but we could get over. So this is how we got back to America. Then we landed up in Ellis Island because they asked us, they asked Mother, would you like to stay in America? And she thought it was just a social question, and she said, sure. And so that made them suspicious that we want to come into America now and then stay illegally. So we landed up in Ellis Island, but my brother, I don't know how he didn't have to come and with the Austrian, I don't know how this happened.
This is the doctor.
The doctor, yeah. So he went to the Archbishop Cardinal of Philadelphia, and he got us out after 4 days. You know, we was politically criminals. But, you know, it was quite an experience.
Yeah, well, now this was in
39. Yeah. So then we got out, and then we started our second two in America, and Johannes was born, was already born, yeah, in 38, Johannes was born January 39, so this was the during our first tour through America. We, over Christmas, we rented the house in Germantown, and this is where, because Johannes had to be born, so this is where he was born, and then we were 10. And he traveled with us in a, well, he came back with us to Europe, and then on tour, we had a little cradle hanging in the back of the bus, and this is where he traveled with us. And so we went all over the States, you know, every year back and forth, all over Canada. But in one of those tours, we also came to Vermont. And we loved Vermont because it reminded us of Austria, you know, these, you know, pastures and farms, and so it was beautiful. But our driver said, never settle in Vermont because all they do is raise gravestones. Because there's a, you know, there's marble in Vermont, in Mandberry, they have a
granite.
A what?
Granite.
Yeah, granite, and yeah, and of course all the fields are full of stones. So every year the frost heaves it out, and they have to, farmers have to collect stones, not for gravestones, but a lot of stones. So we settled. Well, we came to, well, I'll tell you about the whole story. We settled, we had a concert in Philadelphia, and somebody came backstage. It was an afternoon concert in Philadelphia. And he said, you have to come out to Marion. I have a friend there. He's a lawyer, Henry Drinker, who translates Bach, all the Bach chorals into English, and he loves to direct, so he invites his friends every month. You know, that we were there on that day was also God's guiding. And he gives, they have to sing for him in all his translations, you know, and he conducts. He has a big hall there, and he would love to hear it because he was impressed with our Bach, what we sang. I forgot what we sang. So we went with him, and we just busted into into this party, you know, they were just eating, you know. So we were invited to have dinner there, and then we sang for them. And he was so impressed that he said, do you have a place to stay? You know, his headquarters. He said, we said, no, we just travel around in the bus. And he said, well, he has a house opposite the street that belonged to his mother, but she just died, and if you want to, we can use this house. Now, this man was really godsend. So we moved into this house, and the nice thing was, you know, people came from all over and brought us things to make the house more livable, you know. It was pictures and curtains and things which you think is a little bit unnecessary, although it's necessary to make yourself felt at home, but, I mean, feel at home. So this is where we then stayed, and then of course we had to sing every month. We had to go over and sing for him. Well, that was no trouble. And he was very, very nice. And his wife and three children. And one played the flute. So, and then we had a friend who was a teacher of the school where mother went to school in Vienna. And they kept in contact, and this teacher had married an American citizen. So she came over here, and she spent this, and he died, and she spent the summer in Stowe. And one day she called up and said, there's a house available. It would be big enough for you. The owners are two brothers who were drafted, and they want to rent the house for the summer. So if you want to, you could come up and spend the summer in Stowe, and it was so hot in Philadelphia. We were glad, you know, that we had an opportunity to come to Vermont. So we agreed, and we packed up and came for the summer to Vermont, to Stowe, Stowaway. You know, this little, well, it's an inn at the foot of the mountain. And at that time, my father was thinking, you know, eventually we should settle here, you know. And he and mother went all over the place to look up the houses that were advertised in a newspaper that for sale, you know. And then they came home and said, you know, we found out when it says in good condition, then it is not so good. In fair condition, it's bad, and impossible. In fair condition, you cannot even move in. So we had put down $100, but I forgot to play somewhere south of Vermont. And it was a lake, a little lake, but and surrounded by mountains. It was a little bit tight, you know. But we thought it was great. And then, but we did not really know should we buy it or not. And we thought we'll pray. So we changed the broom closet into a little chapel, and we took turns. Every hour somebody else came in, you know, to pray for an hour. So we prayed 3 nights and 3 days for a place. But still we couldn't find anything. So then we had to go home to practice and go on tour again, you know. And the stepson of this friend, you know, who called us up, said he was an architect, was also in Europe, knew Austria very well. And he said, there was just a farmer at my place, and he said there's his farm is available on top of the hill up there somewhere. Would you like to? And we said, no, we no more interest, you know, we know already this good and fair conditions. So we said, we have to go home. I said, let's go up just for the ride. It was a beautiful Sunday. So some of us went with him up there, you know.
Is this in Stowe now?
Yeah. And that was, you know, we went up Loose Hill and saw the view. It was breathtaking. The house was in fair condition, but we bought the view. It was so beautiful. And we, And then in March, my two brothers went up to help a carpenter to raise the roof and put in another floor because it was too small, you know, and to, you know, renovate the whole thing. But the blizzard came and the whole thing collapsed. And it was a blessing, you know. So then they were drafted. They had to go to Camp Hale, Colorado. And so in May then we came up, and all the girls, we started cleaning up the place, take all the old boards away from the fallen down house. And Mr. What was his name? Emmett. Emmett was his name. He was not able to go to the army to be drafted, but he helped us, you know, with the hard work. And mother went to an auction to get a bed. She came home with two horses, and there was a horse barn there, you know. So we used the horses and the stone, and the not a stone, a stone boat too, to take all the thing away. But you know, what do you call these scoops? You know, like, where they dig into the ground and take. It looks like a dustpan. No, it's not really. It looks like a big dustpan, and you push it into the ground.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And then you have a spoonful of dirt, and the horses pull them away, and you dump them somewhere. We didn't have a machine, you know, to dig out the cellar, so we had to do this all ourselves. And then we got another carpenter, Mr. Sears. And so, you know, all the summer we worked there, we stepped on nails, we had to get tetanus injections. At the end of the summer, the house was up, you know, with the 2x4s and I don't know, clapboards. I don't think the clapboards were there, but no roof, you know. And we didn't know how to get it on the roof before we had to go on tour. So we had sung for the school once so that they could fix their roof. And when they heard that we need a roof, that was really very nice, because all the Vermont husbands, I mean the store husbands, came up to help us shingle the roof. And the carpenter class of that year in the school came also during the week, you know, and they finished, and when we left, the house was under roof. That was really nice. Mm. Yeah. And so we felt part of the community then, you know, because in the beginning they were very suspicious what we were, and there was this Uncle Craig, Mr. Bird, Craig Bird. We called him Uncle Craig because he was a real friend. When we spent the summer in Stowaway, he needed somebody to entertain at the there was a military police camp. First it was CCC camp at the foot of the hill, you know, towards Nebraska Valley. And these soldiers wanted, you know, he thought we should go and sing for the soldiers. So we went there and sang for the soldiers. And there was sort of a dell, you know. It must have been a gravel pit. It was a slope, you know, and like a stage down there. And so we sang here, and the soldiers were sitting on the slope. It was like an amphitheater, you know. And so we knew about the existence of this camp. And then in 43 or 42 when we came up to, no, it was the next year, it must have been 43. Mother heard that they wanted to take this camp down, and she had already the idea of music camp, I guess, because she said, oh no, we will rent it. And she rushed down to the town and asked if we could get a lease on this barracks, you know, because we wanted to start a music camp in the summer. And they did. They gave it to us for 12 years. And so then next year, we went down and fixed all the roofs, you know, put new tar paper on, and the steps were broken, so we fixed that. And that was a big undertaking to fix up the camp for, and Mother sent out already leaflets. And then the first year, we had quite a few people, you know, to come for the music camp. And it was very nice, because when they came, they sort of looked at each other very suspiciously, you know. But after they sang together for the first time, they were already melted together. Yeah, it was really nice to see how they always, and they made friends for years, you know. It was a very good thing, and Father Vasna conducted them in the singing, and I was teaching a recorder. And then we played in the evening, we played for the people for folk dancing. I have a picture here somewhere, the folk dancing. And so then we took them on different trips, and they sang on top of the mountain, Bingham Falls, Mount Mansfield, Lake Mount Mansfield, in the Nebraska Valley, at the end of the Nebraska Valley. And so we took them and they sang there, which was very nice. They got out of the camp, you know, and saw different things, and we brought the food there, and we had a great time.
Was that the Mount Mansfield house you sang there, you mean?
When we sang?
Yeah.
No, we sang. No, it was there, but we didn't sing in the house. We sang at the foot of the knolls.
Oh.
Outside, you know. We played recorder also outside, which was sometimes hard when the wind blew. we hired the buses, school buses, you know, and Mr. What's his name? Couture. He would take our crowds, you know, to the mountainsides or wherever we wanted to go. And we took our pickup, fill it up with milk and water and coffee and sandwiches. And then on the last day, last night, we had a picnic at the farm. We called it the farm. It was now the lodge, you know. There's a beautiful view into the Nebraska Valley, and we had schmarrn and hot dogs, and then afterwards we would dance. And my brother and I, he played the clarinet, I played the accordion, and then we usually had somebody from the crowd who played guitar. And we put on a jeep, and very dramatically we were brought into the site, and the people danced around us. It was very nice. And then they walked home, and then we had a big bonfire at this deli, you know, where we sang for the soldiers. And they sang all the songs they learned by heart, already by heart, you know. It was very, very nice. And lots of friendships were came to be, you know, for the rest of the, still, you know.
And so that first summer you had how many people, roughly?
We must have had about 70.
For the...
Yeah, and sometimes it was over 100. We had to send them to the village or up to the house to stay, you know, because we couldn't house them in the barracks.
And this was the first summer you had as many as 70, or...?
Yeah, something like this.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, we see the people knew, had heard us already in concert, so they knew about us.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Yeah, it was quite a thing. And, of course, Stowe gained through our guests, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, the nice thing was that we made friends with the people, you know. There was Mr. Stafford in the hardware store, you know, and his wife. I went quite a few times to visit her, you know. And so several people, you know, with whom we kept up contact, you know, they're all dead now. And Uncle Craig was a real benefactor for us. You know, many times he came up to visit us and took us around and showed us all over Stowe sites, you know. And whenever we needed help, he would give advice. He was a real good uncle. Yeah.
So that was the start of the music school, which
yeah.
you did every
every year camp. Until 56. Yeah. And then in 56, 55, and in 50 we went all over South America, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then in 1955 we were invited to go to Australia, and we sang, of course, in Hawaii we had sung before, but we, on the way out, we sang in Hawaii again, and then Fiji, New Zealand, and then we came to Australia. It was cold, I'm telling you. They don't have heat in the houses, the hotels are not heated. It was absolutely... One priest who was in England during the war, he said, "I think hell is not a fire, it is a freezing lake." And this is what we felt in Australia. Never again, they said, I made up my mind, never, ever will I go to Australia and New Zealand in the winter. They opened the windows, you know, and let the whole cold air come in. They didn't heat the houses. And they had, the children have to go to school still, you know, without stockings, shorts, the boys' shorts in the winter. Crazy idea. Anyway. So we went to Australia, and you know, I always wanted to be a missionary. Since I was a little girl, 8 years old, I wanted to go to the mission in Africa. What it involved, I didn't know, but we collected silver paper, you know, for the missionaries. It was done at that time, you know, they could buy children to come to school and then they converted them, and so that was the way of getting people into the church. And So when school was over, we were already singing, so I knew this, I cannot go now. And then I thought, well, maybe the mission is the singing. My mission is the singing now. So when we went to Australia, there was a priest from New Guinea. I didn't even know New Guinea was on the map. There are so many islands, you know, that you don't know which one is which. And he told us all about his mission on the last island east of New Guinea, you know, Russell Island. And so I thought, well, maybe I go there. When as soon as we stop singing, I will. This is where I want to go. And my brother had already married and had 5 children. The 6th one was born while he was in Australia, and it was too much. We were 6 months gone, you know. And he knew that his wife had to struggle all by herself with 6 children, you know. So he said he cannot go anymore.
This is Johannes?
No, this is Werner. And we had to, you know, there was already, Johanna was married, Lolly was married, Martina married and died in her childbirth. And so we had to take in other people, and it was not a pure family anymore. So we thought we had sung enough. And we decided to stop. The next tour would have been to Japan, but we said, enough. I said, all right, I go to New Guinea. And I asked Johannes if he wanted to come with me, and he wanted to come. So we wrote to them if we can come to New Guinea, you know, to one of the islands. This was this priest was working in the islands east of New Guinea. So he said, we will be most welcome. And then Rosemary joined us in the last minute, so the 3 of us went out in 1956, November 1956. We went to New Guinea, and there was this island where we landed up, is called Ferguson Island. And it's still, you know, not many white people. There's a hospital which is run by white people, but down the coast, you know. But the area was not many white people, no white people. So we were the only ones in this little area, the priest and the 3 of us. And this is where, then after my brother had to, he built a church. He learned the language pretty well. And he built a school and a house and a church there with the people. I mean, but his job was to oversee, because when they go out, you know, to cut material, they come back not enough or too long or too short, and then they have to go out. So he had to overlook all this and organize the people and so. And he did a good job, and he learned the language very well. He's a very talented in languages, and just being with the people, he picked it up. And my sister and I had to teach and do medical work. Now we had to give injections. We practiced on a papaya. And, you know, but this is a story all by itself. And so then Johannes went back in after 4 years, and no, after 2 years, and Rosemary and I after 4 years. But they both stayed in here, and he went to university, school, you know, and Rosemary wanted to become a nurse, so she went to New Haven, and I couldn't stay here, I had to go back. So I went back.
To New Guinea.
Yeah, and ever back and forth until 87. I left 87.
I'll be darned. So yeah. You were in New Guinea
almost 30 years, you know, not really 30 years, but from 56 till 87. And I came home and stayed home because mother was sick, or my sister was sick. So then as soon as I could, I went back again.
Gosh, I didn't realize that at all.
So that's my life after singing. And the others, most of them married. And my older sister, she has now a kindergarten in Baltimore. She started a kindergarten here at the hillside. They had for 2 years, I think, they had kindergarten, but they couldn't make out because there were not enough children, so they went to Baltimore.
Yeah.
But Uncle Craig was, you know, he helped them with the kindergarten, and then he told his story, and my sister typed it out for him. And I don't really know what happened to that story. I think his daughter, Helen, must have the story now. He was supposed to become a book, because he owned a lot of land and had a sawmill in Stowe. That sawmill is gone now. You can't even, I know where it was, but otherwise you wouldn't think there was a mill, sawmill, you know. And the ranch camp, he started the ranch camp. I think he was also instrumental with the skiing for Mr. Rouge, you know, and the road up to the mountain, the hotel and all these things. But this story you would have to get from somebody else.
Excuse me. I think that.
In 1980, I think, when the house burned down.
Well, you started
the music camp.
The music camp.
Yeah.
And then did that turn into the lodge?
That turned into, yeah. Well, you see, I told you we sent some people up to the lodge already when we had an overflow at the camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it started slowly up there already. And then Mother had, I forgot now in which year, she added a wing, you know,
mm-hmm.
which was used then to take people in, because in case we had to stop, we had to have an income. And but it wasn't enough. And in 69, my brother, we sort of went into the red, you know. And we all...